already. Okay, so welcome back to the new term. Time to have a look at the parsha. Welcome to those that are here. Welcome to those on Zoom. And we'll begin a new cycle, a new year. So Lech Lecha, of course, is an exciting parsha. It's when Avraham Avinu is born, the beginning of the Jewish history, really. Just to go through a quick overview of the parsha, and then we'll go into something more detailed. So, the beginning of the parsha, of course, begins with Hashem's first mitzvah to Avraham Avinu, which is to go, Lech Lecha, to go to the land of Israel. We spoke many times about this, what the significance is, what it means, and so on and so forth. He goes together with his wife, his nephew, Lot, and continues to spread the message of monotheism, of one God, and so on. When he gets to Israel, a famine breaks out in the land, and he's forced to go down to Egypt. There's a whole story with Pharaoh, Paro, and his wife, Sarah, and so we'll go into that a bit as we progress. When he comes back to the land of Eretz Israel, him and Lot separate, because there was politics there between the shepherds, so they had to go, and Lot chooses to go to the city of Sodom, which was actually an evil city, which ultimately, next week's parsha, was destroyed. There's the famous war between the four and the five kings, which involves Sodom, and ultimately Avraham Avinu fights the war against the strong army and rescues his nephew Lot, comes back to Yerushalayim, and is blessed by the king of Yerushalayim, who was Malki Tzedek, which you understand actually to be Shem, the son of Noach. Another interesting incident in this week's parsha is what we call Bris Ben Absarim. Bris Ben Absarim is the covenant, the famous covenant of the various animals that Avraham Avinu had to do, and it was in a vision that Avraham Avinu had, where Hashem revealed to him the plan that in fact his children would eventually be slaves in a foreign land, and that they would leave and they would eventually come to the land of Israel. Sarah, at this point, is still childless. She doesn't have any children, so she asks Avraham Avinu to marry her maidservant, Hagar, which he does. There was trouble there, yet she had to leave the house. A series of angels reveal herself to Hagar, and then eventually she returns and she gives birth to the famous son, Ishmael. And then later on, at the end of the parsha, Avraham Avinu's name is changed from Avram to Avraham, Sarai to Sarah, and Hashem gives Avraham the mitzvah of Bris Milah, the mitzvah of circumcision, which of course Avraham Avinu was 99 years old at the time. Okay. What we're going to do, that's just an overview of the parasha. What I want to do today is go through one particular story in the parasha. A very, very complex story with complicated questions. We'll try and explore it a little bit. Much has been written on the story, but we'll try and explore it a little bit according to the pshat, and then also try and understand it a bit deeper on an esoteric level, according to Kabbalah and Hasidus and so on. So in order to do that, let's have a look at the Yohanan. So the story goes like this. So Avraham Avinu comes back to Israel. He comes to Israel. Now, we know that Avraham Avinu was tested with 10 tests, right? One of those tests was to leave his birthplace, his father's house, and to travel to Israel, which he does. Uproots himself. He has a promise from Hashem that everything would be good and so on. That's the idea of Lech Lecha. He's traveling all the way to Israel, and he comes to Israel. And then a famine breaks out in the land, and he's forced to go to Egypt. Now, there is the view, the famous view of the Ramban Nachmanides, which we're not going to explore so much today. But actually, he says this was another test which Avraham Avinu did not pass, because he maintains that Avraham Avinu was supposed to come to the land of Israel and stay there. The fact that a famine broke out was not so a famine broke out. So he should stay there anyways. And he didn't. He went to Egypt. But that's the view of the Ramban, not an accepted view by others, especially not Rashi. According to Rashi and most other commentaries, he was supposed to leave, and that was the test. The test was that Hashem sort of forced him into a situation where he was going to have to leave. even though Hashem was the one who told him explicitly that he has to come to the land of Israel. Now Hashem is putting him in a position where he has to leave Israel. That in itself is a test of faith. And Aharon Avinu passed the test, and he went down to Egypt. So let's stay with that view for today. But the story that happens is as following. Let's read through the Pesukim. Pesukim say the following. Vayehi ra'av ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land, meaning the land of Israel. Vayered Avram Mitzrayim, and Avram went to Mitzrayim, logur sham, to be there, kichavet ra'av ba'aretz, because the famine was extremely severe in the land of Israel. Vayehi, and it came to pass, kasher hikriv lavoi Mitzrayim, when he was going to meet, coming close to Mitzrayim. Vayomer el Sarai Ishto, he said to Sarah, his wife, Hine noya daiti, I now know, ki isha yefas marat, you're a woman of beauty. Vihoyok yiru oisach hamitzrim, what's going to happen is the Egyptians will see you. Vomru, they will say, Ishto isos, it's his wife. Vihorgu oisi, they will kill me, says Avram. Vihoysach yechayu, and they will keep you alive. Therefore, Imri noa choysia, please say, you my sister. In order that it should be good for me, and my soul will live because of you. Note the double expression, it will be good for me because of you, and my soul will live. Sorry. When Avram comes to Mitzrayim, they saw the woman, they saw Sarah, that she was extremely attractive and beautiful. And they saw the officer of Paroi, and they praised her in front of Paroi. They thought this is a woman that's fit for the king himself. And the woman was taken to the house of Paroi. And true, as Avram Avinu predicted, Avram hetiv ba'avura. For Avram, he did very good because of her. Avram Avinu had tremendous benefit. He was given tremendous presents. He had sheep, cattle, donkeys, vavadim, slaves, shvachos, meitzunos, vasonos, igmalim, donkey, all different kind of donkey, and camels, and so on. And Sarah gets taken in captivity to the house of Pharaoh. However, what happens there is Hashem protects her, that she shouldn't be violated. Vayinaga Hashem es Paroi negoim gedolim. Hashem plagued the house of Paroi with tremendous plagues. Vespesa, not only Paroi, but his household as well. Al devar Sarai eshes Avram, because of Sarah, the wife of Avram. So eventually Paroi realizes what's happening here. Vayikra Paroi le'Avram, and Paroi called Avram. Vayomer, and he said, Mazoisa sisali, what did you do to me? Why didn't you tell me that it's your wife? Why did you say it's my sister? I took her to be my wife. Now I see that I made a mistake. Here's your wife. And take, go. Vayitzav olav Paroi anoshim, and Paroi commanded people to protect Avram. And he sent him, his ishto and his wife, his kol hashaloi, and anything, everything that belonged to him. That's the story. Now, it's a famous story. You read it every year in the parasha, but the truth is it's a very, very complex story. And I want to just highlight, there's many, many questions. But let me highlight two questions in the story. First of all, what kind of prediction is this? Why did Avram decide that as he gets to Mitzrayim, and they see them as a couple, they're going to murder him and take Sarah, right? Why would they do that? Meaning, if they're ethical people, they won't commit either murder or adultery. If they're not ethical people, so what do they care? If they're prepared to murder him, maybe they won't murder him, maybe they'll just take Sarah. Right, so how does he have this in his mind? Why does he think that they're going to murder him and take her? The bigger question is, how could he put her in danger? Like, what justified Avraham Avinu's strategy? Basically, he's saying to her, please say you're my sister, which means you're going to get taken anyway, right? But at least I'll stay alive. You ever thought of that? Like, Right? So it seems like a very self-serving strategy. In other words, Sarah was going to anyways be taken. She'll anyways be violated against her will in an adulterous relationship because she's a married woman. But he'll live at least, right? What makes the question even stronger, which we'll come to a bit later, is if you have a look at your handout, just to have a look at the bottom of your handout, he says, please tell you my sister, because it'll be good to me, it'll be good for me because of you, and also I'll live. So he has two expressions. So what does it mean it'll be good for me? Not that he's going to live. More than that, says Rashi, l'man yitav li ba'avureich, say you my sister, so it'll be good to me, for me because of you. Yitnu li matonos, they'll give me presents. I'll get rich out of this deal. Avraham Avinu? He has no problem, or seems like no problem leaving his wife in danger. But he's gonna make of the deal. Say you're my sister, I'll stay alive. But before that, even more, Rashi says that first, the Pasuk says that first. I'll make a lot of money, which he did, by the way. Okay. On a side note, I saw the Mefarshim deal with another interesting paradox. In later on in the parsha, where Avraham Avinu wins the war between the four and the five kings, and he fights the war of the four kings who are strong, and he wins that war, and he restores Sodom to its kingdom. And the king of Sodom comes out to meet him and says, please, I want to pay you for everything and I want to reward you. And he turns around to the king of Sodom and he says, I won't take nothing. I won't even take a shoelace from you. So I don't want you saying I made Avraham Avinu wealthy. Right? And suddenly here, he's prepared to leave his wife to be in great danger and make a lot of money off the deal.
And he paid for the plot in Hebron as well, so it wasn't like he wanted it free.
Then, right, exactly. So some of the Farshim say that over here was different because he actually had no money at this point, because there's an interesting Rashi that when he went back to Israel and he had all these presents from Paro and he was laden with wealth, he actually paid his debts in the hotels that he had stayed on the way down, which he didn't have money to pay for. And he took on credit. Right? So it was different. Okay, but that's a separate discussion, but it's interesting. But what's more troubling is what is this all about? So let me just share with you a couple of perspectives before we go into like a deeper idea. So there's again, none of these interpretations necessarily fully answer the whole thing, but they're just interesting different perspectives. So the Ponim Yofes, a commentary on Chumash, says, that, let's leave Ponim Yofes for a minute. Let's go to another interesting thing. Before I explain the different reasons why it happened, I'll just tell you a very interesting. One of the questions we asked is, how did Avraham Avinu predict that would kill him and keep her alive and then come, right? So there's a very fascinating medrash. It's one of these things, I've said this before, we have this concept called a medrash plia. A medrash plia means a cryptic medrash, a wondrous medrash, no one understands what it means. And it takes a bit of effort to decode the medrash, right? So there's a medrash plia, a very strange medrash that says the following. On the pasuk where he says that we're going to get to Mitzrayim, they're going to kill me and keep you alive, so please say you are my sister. The Medrash says, Mikan, from here we learn, Shashoichtin l'choyle b'shabbos. You're allowed to shecht an animal to provide meat for someone who's in danger on Shabbos, who's ill and needs meat. You can do that on Shabbos. Right? So you see that's what it means, cryptic Medrash, right? What's because Avraham Avinu said when I get there they're gonna say you my wife and if they're gonna kill me, right? From here we learn that it's okay to shecht an animal on Shabbos for a sick person. So one of the commentaries explained the following. It starts like this. How did Avraham Avinu know this is gonna happen? Right? The Mitzrayim are obviously evil people. But they're faced with two transgressions here. Either they can just take Sarah and don't care about Avraham Avinu, in which case they'd be committing adultery, right? They're taking a married woman. And we know that Mitzrayim, one of the whole ideas of this is because we know that Mitzrayim was called Erev HaSa'aretz. It was the immoral capital of the world, right, at that time. They were steeped in immorality and depravity, right? So they were faced with this, right? So therefore, they maybe won't care and they will just commit adultery. Or what they could do is they can murder Avraham, which changes Sarah's status, but it's still murder. So if they murder Avraham, they'll be transgressing murder, right? But won't be then liable for the same level of transgression of adultery, because technically Sarah's not a married woman at that stage, right? Of course, they have all other problems against the will and so on. So that, okay, we're just talking about technical adultery now, right? So the Medrash says that Avraham Avinu knew that the thinking would be they would rather murder him than just take her while they're alive. Why? Because if they murder him, they're doing one transgression. They murder him, it's one crime. Right? If they leave him alive and they take Sarah, then each time Sarah is violated, it's a separate crime. So they'd rather commit one crime, Avraham Avinu's thinking. That's their thinking. They'll at least try not commit so many crimes. They'll commit one crime of getting him out of the way, so at least they, in their depraved mind, they'll be able to have Sarah live with someone, be married to the king, and it won't be a separate crime each time because she's not a married woman, right? That's Avraham Avinu's thinking. So says the Medrash, if that's the thinking, if that thinking is correct, so there we learn you can shechit an animal for a sick person on Shabbos. Why? So we know like this. Again, I'm not drawing any halachot over here, I'm not drawing paskin any shah, I'm just saying this is an interesting perspective of the Medrash. Because it's a famous question like this. We know that you'll transgress the Torah with the exception of three cardinal sins. You can sin in order to save someone's life, right? We know that. So what happens if someone becomes dangerously ill on Shabbos? And the person, for whatever reason, the doctors say that he needs meat, right? So it's absolutely impossible, he must eat a certain quantity of meat in order to save his life. And the only meat that's available is non-kosher meat. So here's the question. Do we shecht an animal on Shabbos in order to make sure that the person can have kosher meat? Now, shechting an animal itself is a violation of Shabbos. Or do we allow the sick person to eat non-kosher meat, which is also a violation, but it's the same thing, right? So which one's better? Says the Medrash, Avraham Avinu is describing the Egyptians' thinking. And in that saying, he's going on the principle that it's better to commit one crime than to commit multiple crimes, so then it's better to shecht the animal. If you don't shecht an animal, and you let the person who's sick eat the meat, so every piece of meat the person's going to eat, what we call kazayit, every piece of meat the sick person's going to eat, is another transgression. Whereas if you shecht an animal, it's one transgression, but then at least you have kosher meat. So that's the connection between this cryptic medrash and the story of Avraham Avinu. Okay. However, so that's that sort of that concept. But what really was going on? So there's an interesting perspective from Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. Rabbi Eibeshitz was a great genius. And he wrote a sefer called Tiferes Yonasan on Chumash. And he says the following. He said there was a real strategy. So it was like this. The principle here, again, we've got to remember the underlying principle to understand the story. The underlying principle is that the fact that Sarah was put into danger was inevitable. That was going to happen anyway. Why? Because following, not the Ramban, but following the other commentaries on the Chumash, Avraham Avinu was put into this test by force. Hashem put this test on him. He was forced to go down to Egypt. It wasn't a choice. Right? He was passing a test by going down to Egypt with all his challenges, including the potential danger that Sarah was going to be. Now, he might not have wanted it, he might not have understood it, but that was the reality. Sarah was going to be put into danger no matter what. It wasn't Avraham Avinu's choice in putting her into danger, right? So therefore, Avraham Avinu's perspective would be, well, let me try and minimize the danger, at least minimize the danger either on a spiritual level, on a physical level, whatever the case is, right? So he says like this, the possibility is they'll kill me, obviously, but that's not going to help you. In other words, he figured they're going to take Sarah anyway, if they find Sarah. I mean, there is a Medrash Rashi brings that he actually tried to hide Sarah. right? But that didn't work. So it was all on the premise, if it's not successful. If they end up finding Sarah, they're going to take her anyway, and she's going to be in a potential danger. Either they'll violate her or not, right? So there's a couple of outcomes that could be. One outcome it could be is that he's going to get killed. Well, if he gets killed, that's not saving her, right? Because she's going to be anyways in that position. But it would save her at least spiritually, right, not to be violated as a married woman, okay? So Avraham Avinu comes up with another plan, a similar plan, but halachically, a plan that could save him and her. Well, not save her, but put her in less spiritual danger, right? What is that? Say you're my brother. How's that going to help? It'll keep him alive, but it'll actually increase her spiritual danger because she'll remain a married woman. Right? I'm just approaching this very technically at the moment, right? Says the Tiferes Yonis, and he says the following. He says, no. Before the Torah was given, what was the status of the patriarchs and the matriarchs? Right? It's a famous question. Were they Jews? Were they not Jews? Even though we always refer to Avraham Avinu as the first Jew, we've talked about this before. And even though we talk about Avraham Avinu as the first Jew, even though we talk about Avraham Avinu as being a person that him and Sarah kept the entire Torah, but it's not that simple. We have many, many sources that actually say that Avraham Avinu's actually status and Sarah's status before the giving of the Torah and all Yitzchak and Rakov and all of them actually was a status of a non-Jew with all the obligations, the halachic obligations that a non-Jew has, right? He brings a view, which is an interesting view, which explains because they were getting close to coming into Egypt at that point, that the Avos and the Emois, the patriarchs and the matriarchs, actually had a status of a Jew, but only in the land of Israel. Hashem told Avraham Avinu to go to Israel, and there he has a status of a Jew. But when he comes out of Israel, right, when he comes out of Israel, it's different. That they don't have a status of a Jew, right? By the way, that's one of the, just to digress for a moment, that's one of the explanations about what happened with Yaakov and marrying two sisters. Right? Even though Yaakov married Rachel and Leah. Now, according to the Torah, one of the forbidden relationships is to have polygamy in the Torah is allowed, even though it's not allowed today, but it was originally allowed. Not recommended necessarily, but allowed, right? But not two sisters. But that's only for Jews, not for non-Jews, right? So Yaakov Avinu marries Rachel and Leah. One of the ideas is because he was outside of Israel, he didn't really have a status of a Jew at that point, therefore the marriage wasn't actually prohibited, which explains the outcome and the consequence why when he came back to Israel, as he's entering Israel, Rachel passes away. Right? The famous, she died early in childbirth. One of the explanations that's given is because once he came back to Israel, he was now under Torah law, and because he was having two sisters, the consequence was that she actually passed away. Okay. It's coming back here. So Avraham Avinu and Sarah, according to this explanation, have a status of being Jewish, halachically Jewish, in Israel. Right? However, out of Israel, they have a status of a non-Jew. Now, if you look in the Rambam, you look in the Gemara, how does marriage work with a Jew and a Jewish couple and the dissolution of marriage? And how does the marriage and the dissolution of marriage happen in a non-Jew? So with a Jew, it happens through kiddushin. There's a certain mechanism of how man and woman become wife, right? And then to undo that requires a get, right? So if they go their separate ways, they don't want to be married anymore, all that doesn't help. There needs to be a get to undo the marriage, yeah? However, for a non-Jew, even though, of course, in secular law, there's a process of divorce, but in secular law, it's different, right? In secular, in non-Jewish law, according to the Torah, in the Torah non-Jewish law, put it that way, man and wife become a couple when they commit to each other. They become an unmarried couple when they decide not to be married. That's it. It's as simple as that. When they leave each other, they separate, they decide not to be married, they declare they no longer want to be married, be together as husband and wife, the marriage is null and void, right? Says that the Pharisee Yonis, Avraham Avinu wanted to create a mechanism where he was going to minimize the spiritual damage for Sarah and save himself at the same time. How can he do that? At the beginning, it seemed like the only solution is that he should get killed. If they kill him, then Sarah will still be taken, won't help Sarah, but at least It'll help her spiritually. She won't be a married woman, right? Avraham Avinu says, I have a better plan. Please say you're my brother. Meaning we'll declare that we're no longer going to be married. You say, no, he's not my husband anymore. He's my brother. And because he's my brother, therefore we're not married. So therefore I can stay alive that way. If you declare that I'm not your husband, and I declare you're not my wife, then we're no longer married. And therefore you're not a married woman, and I'm still alive. So we both came. Right? So that's just a little bit explained. That's one perspective to understand what the plan was. Still makes it difficult. How could you be in that danger? Why does he want presents? But at least that's one sort of perspective. The Sifsei Chachomim, which is one of the commentaries on Rashi, he says another thing. One second. He says another thing. That actually Avraham Avinu had a different plan. A very interesting perspective. He says, he asks the question, how could Avraham Avinu do this? He says, no, the plan was different, which answers a little bit, makes it even easier to understand. Avraham Avinu actually was trying to protect him and her. What was the story that he asked Sarah to tell? Not just that he's a brother. He said, it's a little bit different to what the Tiferes Yonason says. He says, please say you're my brother, and the story we'll make is that you are my brother, but you married, and your husband disappeared. We're looking for your husband. Right? Now, based on the assumption that Avraham Avinu had for whatever reason, that they don't want to take a woman who's married, they won't do that, because of the multiple crimes of adultery, whatever the case is. He said, let's do this. Let's say you are my brother. We'll concoct a story that you are my brother, and that you still have a husband, and we're trying to find him, say she lets you go, and she should give you a get, or give you a divorce, whatever the case is, so that the Mitzrayim will think that I'm not your husband, so therefore killing me is not going to help them, and you do have a husband, and that'll save you. Right? So that was the plan. That's an interesting perspective. That's an interesting idea to try and understand what actually happened here. Which is connected to one other thing that I want to say before I go into a sort of a long idea. It's connected to what the Kli Yakar says. The Kli Yakar says a different idea, a little bit different to the Sifsei Chachamim. And the Kli Yakar says like this. He says, what happens is as follows. He says, let's just have a look at your handout a second. Have a look at the second bolded sentence. I'm terribly sorry, those on Zoom, I just realized that I didn't share the screen. That doesn't help much. Sorry. One second. There we are. There we are. That bolded sentence there. Okay. Pasuk says, "Vayenaga Hashem es Paroi negoim gedolim." Hashem plagued Paroi with great plagues, Ves Beisa and his household. Al devar Sarai, because of the word, or the matter of Sarai, Eshes Avram, the wife of Avram. Now, the word al devar can mean regarding the matter of, or the word al devar can also mean words, because of what Sarah said. So the Kli Yakar has an idea like this. That what happened was, they came to Egypt. Sarah says, he's my brother. So they leave Avraham Avinu alone. And then Sarah gets taken to the house of Paroi. And she tells Paroi, no, I'm actually a married woman. He is my husband. Let's go into the Kli Yakar what happened. So to protect herself, which was maybe part of the plan. He would stay protected because at the border he would say he's the husband. He's only the brother. Then she'd get taken and then she'd declare that she's actually married to him. But what happened was, says Kli Yakar, Paroi didn't believe her. Right? Didn't believe her. And therefore he attempted to marry her and attempted to violate her. Which is why the Torah says that Hashem plagued her. Hashem plagued the house of Paroi, al devar Sarai Eshes Avram. an account of the words of Sarah, the wife of Avram. In other words, because Sarah told Paro that she's actually married, and that in fact she's married to Aravuna, you wouldn't believe her. That's why Hashem had to protect her by plaguing the house of Paro. Right? So in fact, the end of the story was that nothing happened to her. Right? We know that she was protected. And then she came back to her husband, Avram. Okay. What I want to do is I want to share with you a whole nother explanation, which will also answer the question about why Avram Avinu could put her in danger, number one. Also, why Avram Avinu was so interested in the benefit that he's going to have on account of it, right? So this is based on a talk that the Lubavitcher Rebbe gave, a talk in 78 actually, and it explains it based on a Zohar, based on the Rashi and based on the Zohar. So the Zohar says a very interesting thing. The Zohar makes two comments. The Zohar says, first of all, Avraham Avinu absolutely knew that nothing would happen to Sarah. Why? Because he knew that her schus, her merit was so good, was so great, right? That nothing would happen to her. And she'd be protected. That's number one. Which already then answers the question. If that's the case, then it's fine. In other words, knowing what we know. Number one, he had to go down to Mitzrayim. Sarah being put in danger would be inevitable. Now add a third layer to the mix that Avraham Avinu absolutely knew with absolute certainty that the schus, the merit of Sarah, would actually protect her. And nothing would actually happen to her. See, if that's the case, the plan was good. The plan was a very good plan. The plan was, say you my brother. He felt that he's in danger more than anything else. Say you my brother, at least I'll live. You'll go down to the house of Paro. You'll be protected and everything will be okay. So that's what the Zohar says is a matter of certainty. That's like a given. What does bother the Zohar, what the Zohar does ask, right? He says, why does he want material gain from it? What's that all about? Right? Why does he ask, How come he says to her, "Leman yitav li ba'avurech," that it's going to be good for you, good for me because of you? And Rashi says, meaning it's, I'm going to have material success because of that. I'm going to have material gain because of that. How can that be? That's bothering the Zohar a little bit, right? Says the Zohar, an interesting little cryptic thing. Says the Zohar, something that needs to be understood. Says Zohar, he said that to her because he believed so much in her schus, he believed so much in her merit, he believed so much that she would be absolutely protected. He took the schus, he took the merit a step further, because the Gemara says that the parnasa, the livelihood of a household, depends on the woman. All right, that's what the Gemara says, and the Gemara learns it out from here. That a person, when a married couple sets out and they want to establish a house, the parnasa, the livelihood, the sustenance of the house comes in the schus of the akeres habayis, of the one who runs the house, which is the woman, right? So Avraham Avinu says to Sarah like this: nothing's going to happen to you. Your schus is tremendous. Not only your schus is tremendous, your schus is so great that I'm going to be blessed because of that. In other words, my success, not only my survival, but my success is going to come as on account of you. Right? That's what the Zohar says. However, what's still not understood, so why the emphasis? Why is that so important? Why does that seem to be a feature here? Please say you're my brother, because I'm going to gain because of you. What is all that? So in this talk, the Rebbe explains it on two levels. Like why that was so important to Avraham Avinu. First, on a very simple pshat level, why Avraham Avinu saw this as an opportunity for material success and why that was important. And then on a greatest and then a much deeper spiritual level. So on the pshat level is like this. We have at the beginning of the parsha, I'm just going to stop the share and read the text. Give me 1 second. All right. We have at the beginning of the parasha where Hashem says, Lech lecha, go. He tells Avraham Avinu, take your family and go. And then he says, I'm going to do three things. I'm going to bless you, I'm going to make you a great nation, and I'm going to make your name great, right? Says Rashi, what does it mean, I'll bless you? Says Rashi, b'momoy. Hashem promised Avraham Avinu, I will bless you with material success. I'll bless you with lots of money, right? For Avraham Avinu, who followed Hashem in every single detail, that was part of the instruction. Part of the instruction, part of the test was, I'm sending you to the land of Israel. And I have three goals. In Israel, you will have a son, you'll have children, you have descendants from which will come a great nation. Your name will be great. I think part of the name being great is part of the reputation of Avraham Avinu in terms of the work he was doing in outreach and bringing people spiritually closer to the monotheistic view and so on. And I'm going to bless you materially. Right? Avraham Avinu saw that as part of passing the test. And therefore Avraham Avinu felt that it's his mission. Before we go deeper to understand why, but he understood that it's his mission that when he passes Hashem's test and he does whatever Hashem wants him to do and he goes in the direction in whichever direction Hashem sends him, if an opportunity arises for material success, he's under obligation not to deny it. Why? Because that's part of the mission. Hashem wanted him to do that. Hashem said, Lech lecha ba'artzecha. It wasn't just a reward. Now, don't worry about uprooting yourself. I'm going to bless you. No. It's part of the instruction. Lech lecha, go. And part of the mission is these three outcomes have to occur. These three results have to happen. So Avraham Avinu is going down to Mitzrayim, which is also part of the test according to Rashi and all the Mefarshim. He arrives in Mitzrayim, he's coming close to Mitzrayim, and he says, listen, there's going to be a problem. The problem is that they're going to take you away. It's an inevitable problem. However, says the Zohar, he knows for sure, and nothing's going to happen to Sarah. Nothing's going to happen to Sarah, because the schus is so great. But he turns around to Sarah and he says, listen, this is how the story is going to play out. They're going to take you, but nothing's going to happen to you. But I see here an opportunity to fulfill Hashem's wishes. If you say you're my brother, sorry, you say I'm your brother, number one, that protects me. And number two, Leman Yitav li ba'avurech, I'm going to have benefit on your account. I'm going to be successful materially because of you, in your schus. Why is that important? Why does he have to say it? Why does that come into the equation altogether? Because it was part of the mission. And Avraham Avinu had to fulfill that mission if the opportunity came his way. He wasn't allowed to deny it. Which might also explain what we said before, why later on with Sodom, he told him, I don't want a shoelace from you. Because at that point he was really wealthy, he didn't need it. Right? Anything he needed. At this point he didn't. Therefore he wasn't allowed to deny that opportunity because that was part of the command of Hashem. Part of fulfilling the passing the test of Lech Lecha was to take an opportunity to find material success because that was part of Hashem's bracha and therefore part of Hashem's success. So that's on a very pshat level, why that's so important, why Rashi says that. So in other words, putting it all together just before we go further, so essentially how does this whole story play out and how's it understood? He had to go to Mitzrayim. What was going to happen anyway. It was inevitable. He knew nothing was going to happen to Sarah. He needed to protect himself, which is why he devised the plan that she should say, he's the brother. Not only that, he had to take that opportunity because Leman Yitav Li Ba'avurech, because he had to take an opportunity that would be beneficial for him materially. Now, obviously, if the choice was to get material success or save Sarah from the stress completely, then he would have done that. Obviously, that would take precedence. But it wasn't. He knew it wasn't. Because he knew they were going to kill him, if not. So therefore, she'd be taken anyway. So therefore, he builds into the plan not just to protect himself and to protect Sarah, which he was certain was going to be protected, but he builds into the plan a plan for material gain because he had to do that according to what Rashi is telling us and the way the Rebbe explains it over here because he had to take up the opportunity for material success because that was part of the mission. Okay. That's on a pshat level. Now let's take this whole thing as he takes in that talk on a much, much deeper level. And this is based on an idea which is brought in Kabbalah, and It needs a long time to explain it, so I'm not going to go into it. So I just have to, I guess, trust me on it for the moment. That the Avos and the Imois, the patriarchs and the matriarchs, particularly Avram and Sarah, we find this many, many places, represent the partnership between the neshama and the guf, between the soul and the body. Right? It's got to do with the Kabbalistic makeup of the spheres, where the idea of what we call the six midas, the six emotional powers of a person, and malchus. Malchus is that power that is able to interact with the lower level, with the physical level, whereas the six remain transcendent and aloof. Bottom line is, Avram and Sarah, we find a similar thing with Yitzchak and Rivka and so on, but represents the concept of neshama and guf, the body and the soul. Now, we know that the neshama, we know this from Pirkei Avos even, but we know the neshama resists coming down into the body, right? Because the neshama, before it comes down in this physical world, is spiritually protected, very much bound up with Hashem. And for the neshama to come down to the body, the neshama becomes somewhat trapped here in the body, in the physical body, and therefore resists, which is why the Pirkei Avos tells us, Bal karchoch atachai, against your will you are born. Hashem has to force the neshama to come down. Yet the same Pirkei Avos tells us that when it comes to the end of a person's life, the neshama doesn't want to leave. Right? It says, Bal karchoch atames, against your will you die. Why doesn't it want to leave? Because the neshama very quickly realizes that the neshama coming down will experience what we call a yerida tzorech aliyah. It will experience an ascent, an elevation, because it came down. Because when the neshama works through the body, and only through the body, can the neshama interact and connect with what we call the sparks, the hidden sparks, the very deep and hidden godly energy that is invested specifically in the physical world, that only the body could recapture and only the body could elevate. Through that, the neshama has a tremendous elevation. Through the neshama benefits tremendously. So we have a situation here where, on one hand, the neshama seems a lot more spiritual than the body, right? The body's much more physical. But it's only the body operating as a body and being engaged in bodily functions, but doing it under the direction of the neshama, can actually connect to a certain connection with God, to a certain, as we call it in Kabbalah, birur hanitzutzis, the refinement of the hidden sparks in this world, which brings the neshama a tremendous, tremendous benefit, which the neshama cannot achieve it on its own. Which is, of course, the deeper meaning of this whole concept of, and we'll get to the sister and brother part in a minute, but, right, the whole concept where Avraham Avinu says to Sarah that you go into the house of Paro, you're going down to Mitzrayim, you're going to be captured, so to speak, in Mitzrayim, but leman yitav li ba'avurech, I'm going to gain because of you. Meaning you and the body engages in what bodies do in the physical world, engaging in the physical world, I will gain, the neshama will gain because of what the body could achieve. Yeah? What does this tell us? Of course, this is a lesson for everyone. In other words, this highlights the concept which we've talked about many, many times. That is, when a person lives his life in this world, there's two ways we can do it. One is to live a very, very neshama life, to be completely secluded and isolated in a spiritual protection, to sit only and do spiritual things like to learn and daven all day and all night, which sounds like a dream. But yet that doesn't actually achieve what Hashem wanted us to do. When the neshama comes down to the body, the neshama has to send the body, so to speak, has to direct the body to engage with the world, to engage with the physical existence. Because by doing that, number one, that achieves what Hashem wanted us to do to bring Hashem into the world. But also that's where the neshama ultimately is able to achieve an elevation, a much greater elevation than the neshama was able to achieve just being a soul without the partnership of the body. Yeah, does that make sense so far? Okay. Now, One of the ways to explain the great benefit that the neshama has through the service of the divine service of the body is to have a look at two relationships. Now, I'm going to explain to you through this, I'll explain to you what the benefit of the neshama is, but what the benefit of doing it through the body is, but then it'll highlight an interesting question in the parsha, which we'll see in a second. So in order to do this, let's look at two relationships. In Kabbalah it says like this, that there's two types of love that a Yid has for Hashem, which comes like from two different relationships. One type of love is that of a sibling. It's called the love of a sister to a brother. Another one is to a wife, for a wife to a husband, right? There's two types of describing the love that the Jewish people have for Hashem. If you look in Shir HaShirim, you'll find that sometimes the Jewish people are described as a wife, sometimes we're described as a sister, right? So there's the relationship of a sister, there's the relationship of a wife. What's the difference? The difference is like this. A sister, a sibling, there's an ongoing bond between two siblings. And it has to do, it's a matter of fact. In other words, it's by default of them being born to the same parents, right? So the love that exists between two siblings is an eternal love. It's ongoing, it's always there. Okay? It doesn't even, I mean, obviously all relationships require work, but it doesn't require that much work. If it's a decent, healthy family, then people love each other, right? Love each other, why? Because it's a natural state of being. It's my brother, it's my sister, so it's a natural strain of me. Okay. That's what's used to describe the love between the neshama and Hashem. Because the neshama's love for Hashem is like a sibling. The neshama always loves Hashem. It's eternal love. It's constant. Right? It's constant. It doesn't need that much investment. It doesn't need that much work. The neshama, by virtue of the fact that it's a neshama, is connected to God. The love that's described between a husband and wife, that's the love between the body and Hashem. That needs investment. That's about taking two opposites and bringing them together. That's about having to work on it. It waxes and it wanes, not always the same. Sometimes it's more fiery, sometimes less fiery. Right? So it's a much less consistent love in a way. That's the love between the body and Hashem. However, but because of the fact that it's a love which needs a lot more work, a lot more investment, lots more effort, it actually then becomes a much deeper love. The love between husband and wife is considered much more passionate. It's much stronger. Why? Because it needs much more work. And it's not always guaranteed. Yeah? So therefore, when the neshama comes into a body, the neshama has an advantage. It's got an ongoing, consistent, pretty, same level love to Hashem that it always has. What does the neshama gain when it comes into the body? When it comes into a body, it has to engage, and not only comes into the body, but sends the body to engage in the world. Suddenly there's challenges. Suddenly the relationship between us and Hashem is not so automatic. It's not so obvious. It's not so consistent. It's not so natural, right? Neshama, before it comes down to the world, is just it's a sibling. It's very simple. It's a consistent love. When it comes down to the body, especially when it starts engaging in the world, which is full of challenges and spiritual challenges and so on, suddenly the love is threatened, and now the love has to be like a husband and wife, where you need to work at it. It's not an obvious love. It's not an obvious relationship. It needs investment. It needs effort. It needs a lot of hard work. But that hard work blossoms into a much more fiery love. So that's the gain that the neshama gets through being part of the body. Okay? However, that raises a very big question then, because everything in Torah has to be exact. See, if that's the case, then the whole thing doesn't make sense here. Because if Avraham Avinu coming down to Mitzrayim is the story of the body and the soul, it's a story of the soul coming down into the body, and it's a story of the soul realizing that it stands only to gain by being in the body. And it's a story of the soul directing the body to engage with the world, with all its challenges, in order to reach a much greater elevation, in order to release those amazing sparks, in order to achieve a love which isn't achievable through remaining spiritual. It has to be in the world. You have to go through the challenge to achieve the love between husband and wife, which is the ultimate. If that's the story of what's happening here in Mitzrayim, of Avraham and Sarah, so how does it fit with the fact that he turns around to him and he says, we're going to go down to Mitzrayim, but Imri no achosiyat, say you my sister. That doesn't work. The whole idea is no, the whole idea is not the sister. The whole idea is to reach a greater love. The whole idea is to reach the love of husband and wife. So why does Avraham Avinu, why does the soul say to the body, say you my sister? On the contrary, don't say you my sister, say you my wife. If we reading this on a spiritual level and we want to achieve a much greater spiritual accomplishment. And the answer is very simple. And this is the way it works. We've expressed this model in different ways many times. The answer is it fits the formula. The neshama can only reach the neshama through being in the body and through being partnering with the body and partnering with the engagement in the physical world can reach a much greater love and a much greater spiritual level than the neshama can do on its own. So Avraham Avinu says to Sarah, please, leman yitav li ba'avurech. It's going to be good for me because of you. In your schus, in your merit, the neshama will become much greater. The neshama doesn't want to leave the body because the neshama, after living here, realizes that it's much better off working with the body. Even though it was perfect before, but that was perfect like a sister. But now it needs to reach a much, much, much greater level. So therefore, please, leman yitav li ba'avurech, it's going to be good for me because of you. But in order for this to work, you need to take my guidance. In order for this to work, the guf, the body, must follow the directives of the neshama. In order for the body to get much greater connection and much greater depth to the soul, that's only when the guf, when the body is taking its guidance and inspiration from the soul. Because if you leave the body on its own, the body will just be materialistic. And the body won't gain, nor the soul. So he says, Imri na, please say you're my sister. In other words, connect to the sister in me. Connect to that love. Connect to that strength which is in the neshama. Take direction from the neshama. Take inspiration from the neshama. And then you'll be able to bring a much greater benefit to me that I can't achieve on my own. That makes sense? In other words, we're not going to have time to go into this, but it's a little bit like in Kabbalah, there's a whole thing about Chochmah and Binah. Chochmah is the conception of an idea and Binah is the development of an idea, right? Chochmah is the truth of the idea. But Kabbalah says that when you bring an idea from Chochmah into Binah, the idea becomes flourishes. Because the source of Binah is actually greater than Chochmah. But it's a hidden source. So when does the source revealed? When does the source come out? If the Binah follows the truth of Chochmah, the Binah will reveal in the idea much greater depth than can be revealed in the idea of Chochmah. Same thing over here. The source of the body is actually higher than the soul. That's what Kabbalah tells us. What the body can achieve down in this world is a greater connection with Hashem. But that source is hidden because it's very physical. So how can the neshama reveal that? And how can the neshama give how can the body reveal that? And how can the body give the soul greater elevation by taking its inspiration from the soul? So therefore, that's the story of the Chumash. They're going down to Mitzrayim, and Avraham Avinu says to Sarah, we're going down to Mitzrayim. And that's a good thing, because it's only through going into the world, into the Mitzrayim of the world, into the challenges of the world, that we can achieve, both of us, you and me, we can achieve the greatest connection with Hashem. Leman yitav li ba'avurech, it's going to be good for me because of you, in your schus. It's only through the body we can achieve that. But I'm asking you a favor, Imri no achosiyat. Say you're my sister. Because you need to connect to the sister, you need to take inspiration from the sister part. The consistent love, the connection, the holiness, which is in me, and only then you can reveal something which I don't have. And that's the Kabbalistic interpretation of the story. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Thank you, everyone on Zoom.
Very different.
Different perspective, right? Yeah.
This was my brother's Pasha.
Ah!
I remember it because it's his birthday coming the 25th of October.
Ah, very nice.